But without secret mongering, Sveth was voluminously oriented about everything, because next to Tuur, Sveth embodied the last fully extensively aware person in regards to everything. He, however, had to get to the bottom of that secret himself, because he also only received partial information from his father. The course of the receiving of the information thereby ran in such a way, that each descendant, female and male, only had information made accessible to a certain point, that is, the basic information. That is equally valid for his father and thus Sveth's grandfather, and so on, and indeed until back to Enoch, respectively Nocademian. Everything further had to then, through one's own learning and through one's own hard efforts, be independently learnt and fathomed so that evolution was guaranteed. The conditions are also still the same today, consequently, therefore, you and Tuur, as well Samjace, have to go the same way, which also applies to me. That also applies to the Earth humans, because if all knowledge was simply tossed out to them like feed and they fed on it thoughtlessly and without processing, then it would bring no proper success, but rather only a certain school knowledge, while the undigested remainder would be secreted again as excrement. In other words, everything undigested would be forgotten, and would therefore be completely useless. But if a certain minimal material is offered, which can be thoroughly further worked on and success can be progressively achieved, then the knowledge persists in a firm form and can, at any time, be transformed into wisdom and expanded. Quetzal, 34. I actually always again admire your knowledge and cognizance.
35.
Yes. What you say is correct. 36. But nevertheless you conceal something from me, my friend. Billy, you are right, dear friend. Indeed if you remember, I gave to a photograph about 10 years ago, that I received from someone anonymously. It was, to be sure, in the month of November or December in the year 1978 or 1979, late annotation, contact 117 on Wednesday November 29th, 1978, 3:12 p.m., from Billy, until Tuur, sentences 98-118. If you get to the bottom of the matter of the photograph, and research everything, then you will undoubtedly solve the secret. It actually must have already been conspicuous to you at that time, yet for some reason, so I suppose, you have, indeed, in spite of the importance of the photograph, made no inquiries about it, and also not recognized the importance. But I am permitted to say no more as an explanation. I have named the basis for that. It could be that you guessed that that was somewhat strange, because I am an earthling, who you have indeed taught and who was therefore your student and who will also remain so in various things. Indeed, just as I still have very much to learn, you are also thus obliged, also Samjace, and to even if he is already an JSEHWJSEH. But you, to and Samjace, you will fathom the secret yet. And when you are so far, when you have reached the Srut degree level of evolution, then the Srutin do stand open for you, out of which you will receive all necessary and, for you, important information and revelations. Quetzal, 37. We have occupied ourselves very fully with the picture, but obviously we did not do that in the way that had been required. 38. We failed to notice a deeper importance to the picture. 39. But now we will make an effort about that. 40. Indeed in recent years I have arrived at the opinion that I had come to know much about you, yet now you give me new puzzles that I can no longer solve so easily. 41. And I also wonder about them. 42. From where do you know the secret of the Srut evolution level, and how is it that you know about the manifesting transmission? 43. Again, you've suddenly become very puzzling to me. Billy, Sveth was a very good teacher for me. Quetzal, 44. But he was not permitted to tell you anything at all about it, because this appertains to the strictest secret teachings. 45. His behavior is incomprehensible. Billy, calm yourself, my son, and don't do Sveth an injustice. He said nothing to me about it. Besides, you've just now advised me that you yourself, indeed also to and some Jace, have evolved into the first grade of the Srut plane, otherwise you would have had no knowledge of this level of evolution and of the manifesting transmission out of the spiritual teachings storage block. Quetzal, 46. Now I understand even less. 47. Indeed you will not say? Billy, yes indeed, my friend, exactly that. Quetzal, 48. Billy, don't look at me like that. I am no wondrous animal. Quetzal, 49. But? Billy, simply take it as it is. Quetzal, 50. But how? Billy, simply swatted and learned, again swatted and again learned and again, Quetzal, 51. Unbelievable. 52. But now much is slowly clear to me. 53. It is, Billy, why do you interrupt yourself? Quetzal, 54. I wanted to say that it is unbelievable. 55. And you have stayed silent to us about all of that until now. 56. Tor will be very astounded when I convey this piece of news to him. 57. Now I'm all the more interested in the real secret that surrounds you. Billy, if there is such a thing, then you, plural, will now soon have it solved. Yet let us now talk of something else. Translator's note, this concludes Dyson's and Vivienne's translated portion. The following was translated by Benjamin Stevens. I still have some questions. At an earlier time, we once talked about the fact, later note, 100th contact, Friday, the 1st of June 1978, Quetzal, sentences 81-84, that there are still many undiscovered nutrients on Earth that are very valuable for humans, but only few are aware of this. In addition, so you said at that time, the Earth people, for inexplicable or incomprehensible reasons of disgust, would avoid these, as you said. At a later time, you gave a further explanation about this, which, unfortunately, was not recorded in a contact report. You spoke of the fact that the aforesaid nutrients existed in the seas, rivers, and lakes. Does it concern small and micro life forms? Quetzal, 58. On the one hand, yes. And to be sure, in the form of vegetal and organism-related plankton. 59. Overall, it concerns very small organisms floating along in the water, which don't move themselves but which are moved by the timeless weak or strong waves of water. 60. But other nutrients also exist in the form of all kinds of algae, etc., which humans could utilize for themselves if they would only strive for it or wouldn't be disgusted by it. 61. The aforementioned products or nutrients, plankton and algae, are diverse and, moreover, are not only satisfying but also health-sustaining and health-promoting, for they contain many vital substances such as various acids, vitamins, as well as trace elements and minerals. 62. Such foods can be found both in salty seas as well as in fresh waters, so therefore in brooks, rivers, streams, and lakes. Note by Billy, May, 2003, with the address Nutrients from Seas and Freshwater, it concerns, on the one hand, as explained by Quetzal, vegetal and organism-related plankton and, on the other hand, algae and other aquatic plants of the most diverse kinds. But primarily, a freshwater alga, namely an algal species by the name of Spirulina platensis, lies behind it, a bluish-green, microscopic alga, general name, blue-green alga, whose spirally coiled cellular filaments, hence, spirulina, exhibit a size of approximately 0.3 millimeters. The genus of blue-green algae comprises about 1,400 species, which are spread all over the world, but they appear, as explained, mainly in freshwater and much less in seawater. Originally, the species of blue-green algae grew in tropical and clean as well as mineral-rich waters of Asia, Africa, and South America, and they were particularly widespread in lakes. The microscopic alga draws its essential nutrients from sunlight, water, and heat. Through photosynthesis, in the case of 40 to 50 degrees Celsius, it binds minerals, trace elements, and vitamins, which are present in the ground, as well as in the air and in the water, and converts them into a complex and natural and very valuable food. Spirulina platensis has a very thin cell membrane and, thus, no cell wall made of indigestible cellulose, as this is given, in contrast, to other microscopic algae and plants. This thin cell membrane ensures that the spirulina food algae can take in the very valuable substances of the blue-green alga in the gastrointestinal tract in an optimally receptive manner and in the human organism very well. If one looks at the ingredients of spirulina platensis as percentages, then there are 60% proteins, 14% carbohydrates, 8.6% ashes, 6.4% raw fibers, and 6% fats. In addition, spirulina platensis contains a whole number of essential and non-essential amino acids, essential fatty acids, plant pigments, vitamins, minerals, and nucleic acids. Spirulina platensis has already been known in various countries since the middle of the 20th century and has also been in use as food, particularly in Japan. However, a triumphal advance around the world and to the whole of humanity, unfortunately, has not yet occurred up to the beginning of the third millennium, even though millions of people already use spirulina products. Unfortunately, many people are disgusted by algae products, but usually only because these are largely unknown in the human food chain. In America and Europe, spirulina finds use as a dietary supplement mainly in initiated circles, consequently, it is, so far, only available in this form and not as actual food. Detailed information on spirulina platensis and the great valuableness of this microscopic alga can be found in the very informative book by Frank Felt, Spirulina, Food for Life, ISBN 264,840. Who has occupied himself with automolecular medicine for many years. Billy, thanks. Certain algae and other aquatic plants are, therefore, not only full replacement plants for all types of vegetables but, beyond that, also very much more valuable than any vegetable cultivated on Earth, if I understood your words correctly. Quetzal, 63. That is correct. Billy, you once said, if I remember correctly, that the foods, alcohol, medicines, and drugs, which a person takes to himself, alter one's genes, as this likewise happens through one's consciousness-related attitude and through one's state of psyche as well as through climatic influences, such as through cold and heat or through atmospheric changes in terms of its chemical composition, etc. I have explained this in such a way to one of our doctors, who then said that this certainly couldn't be the case since genes would only change and develop otherwise, but not in the form as I said. Quetzal, 64. The doctor is mistaken, for your explanation was correct. Billy, there, I am reassured. How is it, however, with the thoughts, the feelings, and the psyche, as you also said that the genes play a certain role there? Quetzal, 65. That is correct. 66. Primarily, the feelings arise from the thoughts, and from these, the state of the psyche is then formed. 67. Consciousness impairment and psychological impairment are based, in principle, on polygenic influences and are multifunctional, which means that they are simultaneously caused by genes and by external factors. 68. The genetic material, however, is not solely responsible but also viruses and trauma, technological sounds, alcohol, medicines, drugs, anxieties, and unjust or hysterical behaviors of others, etc. 69. The genetic code is not dictatorial but rather flexible, therefore, it does not determine the fate of human beings because they do this, in truth, through their thoughts and feelings as well as through their actions. 70. With these, the entire process of emotions and perceptions from within human beings is carried out, as well as through external factors and perceptions, etc. 71. As the relationship of the brain stands to the body, so also do the genes stand in such a relationship to the cells. 72. They are incorporated into a healthy flexibility and plasticity or malleability and are created through a dynamic process. 73. The malleability of the genes frees humans from genetic determinism and, thus, from a causal predetermination of all events or actions, therefore, humans are incorporated into the freedom of the will. 74. Although, this is not always true for every person, unfortunately, because sometimes, the genetic inheritance makes itself independent and decides one's fate without the will of the person. 75. However, this is only true in the case of a vile, serious disease of a neuropsychiatric form, which is directly inherited through a single, mutated, hereditary factor and is then triggered, which also means that the hereditary disease can become further inherited. 76. In the case of a very serious disease of this kind, the whole personality is gradually destroyed, and a fatal end is unavoidable. 77. If parents are suffering from such a serious hereditary disease, even just a single parent, then the disease becomes passed on to the descendants, whereby the related risk of them suffering from the hereditary disease is 50%. Billy, thank you for your remarks. Then another question from a completely different topic. Translator's note, the following portion was translated by Dyson Devine and Vivienne Legg. Our astronomical scientists continue to stubbornly assert that our universe is only just 8-15 billion years old. They have no idea that the visible universe is only one of 7 belts of the universe. They have no idea at all about the belt of our material universe, in which we exist materially, while on the inner side and the outer side of our visible, material universe belt yet 6 further fine matter belts exist. Our scientists also have no idea that the entire universe constitutes a double spiral and egg-shaped creation, and so on. The entire universe, with an age of around 4600 years, reckoned from the Big Bang up to today, will indeed expand up to the point in time of 15550 years, to then, through a contraction, collapse upon itself again. During its expansion, the material belt, respectively, our visible universe, is, through a nearly endless process of transformation, constantly renewed and therefore always stays young. The oldest material that you have found is close to 40 billion years old, while we here on the Earth still have obtained no such material, and for that reason our scientists also dwell in erroneous assumptions. Now, after my long speech, my question is, when, after the coming into existence of the material belt, respectively, our visible material universe, did the first stars actually form? In my opinion, this process must have gone very fast. Quetzal, 78. That is unknown to us, and besides, your question can also not be answered in this manner. 79. You must start from the point at which the last great process of transformation and renewal of the material universe, therefore of our visible material universe, took place nearly 17 billion years ago. 80. Thereby, in the inner part of the outer regions of the material universe belt, not in the outermost part of the actual transformation areas, at a distance of around 14 billion light years from the solar system, new stars formed again which, after around 187 million years of the latest great transformation process, began to radiate and shine. 81. And, in the next decades, these stars will also be discovered by the terrestrial astronomical scientists. 82. Only, unfortunately, they will again draw false conclusions from that, as they have already done so often. Billy, and how, then, do these stars in the transformation belt come into being, if I may ask? Quetzal, 83. That does not fall under our secrecy provisions. 84. The new material which comes into being through the renewal, respectively, through the transformation, condenses under the enormous universal gravity, and in this way it forms, by way of a compression of the mass, a stellar body which becomes more dense and develops a tremendously hot life of its own. Billy, easily said, but surely a process which takes many millions of years. But, with that, I am already at my next question. Is it possible to make a determination about the material mass in our visible material universe if one completely excludes the other six belts? Quetzal, 85. It would be unscientific and arrogant to want to do this, because the entire expanse of our universe is so big and involved in a continuous transformation, that a precise calculation is impossible. 86. Besides, our universe, as naturally also every other, consists not only of coarse matter-material, rather also of pure energies, of which one is black energy, as we call it, and is responsible for a certain form of anti-gravity in the material universe and, according to estimates, constitutes 3/5 of all universal energies. 87. Matter must also be visible in various forms, so dark matter, on one hand, directs the visible and tangible matter which, very meager, is calculated at circa 0.5/5 of the galaxies, while, on the other hand, the dark matter yet amounts to 1.5/5. 88. However, as stated, these data are only based on assumptions and calculations based on estimations, which, as a result of the visible, material universe's continuous transformation, are not constant, rather they are extremely changeable. 89. To want to name precise results would therefore be nonsensical and arrogant and laughable as well, because precise computations cannot be made because of the universe's continuous change. Billy, one could indeed say with justification that our universe's material belt is essentially governed by black energy, or? Quetzal, 90. That is of correctness. Billy, we do know that the entire universe will not expand forever. It will expand only until 1.5555 years from now and then succumb to the contraction. With the expansion process of the entire universe, the visible material universe also always gets bigger, if I regard the whole thing correctly. And because that has to be like that, differing temperatures would probably also have to rule in our universe, because, I assume, warm and cold must come into being through the constant movement of change. Am I on the right track with my assumption? Quetzal, 91. That is of correctness. 92. The temperature fluctuations are, however, universe-wide, and very minimal, yet they emerge primarily in those parts of our material universe, in which the uninterrupted change occurs by means of the outer material belt. 93. It thereby concerns itself with the transition less open transformation zone, as we call it. Billy, this zone of change engenders a soughing sound, as Tua taught me on the great trip. I was also permitted to hear it over the technical device in the great spacer. It was simply gigantic. Tua explained to me that the Earthlings name this phenomenon cosmic background radiation and assume that that is the zone where the Big Bang took place and that the end of the universe is also there. Quetzal, 94. Which does not correspond to accuracy, as you know. Billy, naturally, because indeed the essential entire universe first begins there, with its six other immeasurable belts. Tua also said that the temperature differences are actually only very slight and therefore only tiny variations underlie them which emerge as a result of fluctuations, which would be evoked in all regions of our universe through differences in density. Quetzal, 95. You are a human with a very noteworthy memory. 96. Your exposition corresponds to accuracy. Billy, Tua and you as well as some Jays have said that our Milky Way has about 570 billion suns with planets, but that, in addition to that, there are only about 7 million smaller and bigger solar systems with planets on which higher forms of life exist. Our planetary satellites, respectively, moons also included therein? Quetzal, 97. Yes, because in certain solar systems with enormous central suns there are planetary giants with tremendous gravity which are too big to be able to bear higher forms of life, while their moons, however, are very much in a position to do that. 98. In your understanding, we do not, however, call these objects which bear life moons, rather planets. Billy, quite so, because they are actually planets of a mother planet, or? Quetzal, 99. That is of correctness. Billy, and the 7 million solar systems in our galaxy with planets, on which higher forms of life exist, does that collectively deal only with human civilizations? Quetzal, 100. Number 101. The universe with all its galaxies is very thinly settled with human forms of life, whereby that also includes dimensions shifted in time and space, respectively, all existing space-time configurations. 102. Many planets and moons carry only very lowly microscopic organic life, or only forms of life like mammals, birds, fish, beetles and insects, and so forth, which have nothing to do with higher forms of life. Billy, then I have misunderstood some things, because I was of the view that you have always spoken in such a way that indicated that the forms of life were only humans. Quetzal, 103. Then you have succumbed to an error, if you have assumed that the approximately 7 million solar systems with their planets only correlate to human civilizations. 104. Perhaps you have really, Billy, understood something wrongly. Quetzal, 105. That is what I wanted to say. 106. Known to us, in this galaxy, are only 2,630,000 highly developed human civilizations, which actually belong together, whereby, from other galaxies known to us, a further 1,141,000,000 can be factored in. 107. We know of 1,040,000 civilizations which are developed to an essentially low level in this galaxy which you call the Milky Way. 108. Our scientists estimate that in the entire universe about 60 to 70 essentially human civilizations, of higher and lower form, would have to exist in your material space-time configuration. Billy, what do you understand by human civilization which essentially belong together? Quetzal, 109. That phrase is to be understood as meaning unity of collective progress, which is created through science and technology and thereby also includes developed and improved medical, social and material living conditions, and so forth. Billy, there are very clever people on the Earth who assert that the solar system consists of 12 planets, whereby the Sun and the Earth's moon are also counted as planets. And since until now only the 9 planets, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune and Pluto are known, therefore 9, yet another planet is made up and added with the name of Nibiru, and further labels such as Anus, Planet X, Marduk, Phaeton, Olam, Vulcan and Persephone, and so forth. So, together with the Sun and the Earth's moon, and Nibiru, the stupid thesis of 12 planets in the solar system is supposedly proven. The Anunnaki people supposedly lived on Nibiru and they supposedly gave all kinds of help to the Earth humans. As a young wandering planet, the planet Nibiru, as it is asserted today, was supposedly captured by our solar system around 4 billion years ago, and, always according to this assertion, it then developed. Nibiru is meant to have thereby penetrated into the inner solar system and effected, respectively, evoked, certain alterations of the inner planets and moons before it disappeared again to then become aligned into an orbital period of 3,600 years. And, in opposition to that which corresponds to the truth, that the Earth fundamentally formed from material from space, from gas, planetoids, and so forth, and that the Earth's moon, as a satellite from your space-time configuration, was captured by the Earth, it is asserted that the Earth had been a part of the planet Tiamat and our moon was once the largest moon of Tiamat. Nibiru's last pass through the solar system supposedly occurred about 160 years before Jmanuel's birth. What is to be made of all that? Quetzal, 110. These stories are known to me, because I have studied diverse ancient terrestrial texts, also including many cuneiform tablets, among others. 111.